Welcome to another episode of Bioluminescence. This is the first episode back from the mid-season break, a much-needed break to rebuild and reassess how this whole podcast works. We are officially moved into a new studio space, much more efficient space, much more interesting space. And I'm very, very happy to have an in-person guest. Atlanta's own Rhett Whatley, also known as Daily Bread.
What's up, y'all?
For those of you who don't know, Rhett is a burgeoning producer out of Atlanta. Deep ties in the hip-hop world down here, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, man, I love being from Atlanta, and definitely, you know, I'm inspired and motivated to come out of the sort of hip-hop scene down here, I guess you could say. Shouts to, you know, Drez the Beatnik and the Mike Club crew from the late, you know, 2000s at Apache. That was some formidable years.
I know Atlanta has become probably the most recognizable city for new hip-hop. Right? In like the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. What changes have you seen personally as far as like the styles of music, the kind of the approach to producing music, you know, in this very, very specific ecosystem of hip hop?
Yeah, see, coming from Atlanta, and I've lived here all my life, so saw crunk. You know, that whole trap style of music get real popular around here locally. I remember driving to high school, riding to high school, really, and just, you know, getting 3-6 blasted in my face by the older kids and, you know, Little John, East Side Boys, all that stuff. Yeah. And so
that's the stuff I remember.
Yeah, yeah. So since then, you know, obviously there's, you know, trap has taken off and sort of become, you know, the 808 drums are real popular now. You hear that all over popular, you know, hip hop that's coming out of the city. But what's cool is, I don't know if it's like the K Trinada influence or some of the West Coast stuff, but I've coming from the city, like I've heard more house stuff. I've seen more house events, different stuff like that. Like, just stuff that's a little bit different from what's traditionally coming out of Atlanta.
Sure.
More, you know, different people congregate, and there's been a lot of people moving to the city.
Somehow,
like, Atlanta's gotten even more diverse, it seems. You know what I mean? No. And it's already known as a pretty diverse city, so I'm really proud of that.
Well, I think for a long time, and this is something I can attest to, I guess, is that for a long time, if you weren't from Atlanta, you didn't live in Atlanta, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the last, you know, 10 plus years or so, it's become a much more attractive city to relocate to, much in the same way that Denver was in the early 2000s. I think Atlanta is kind of that new, you know, every city kind of has that phase where it's like, we're the cool place to be, come here. You know, it was like Portland and Seattle in the 90s and early 2000s. Then it became Denver and Austin, and now it's Atlanta. I mean, I moved here 4 years ago, 5 years ago, so.
Yeah, how you like it here, man? So you moved here from Denver, you know?
Yeah, you know.
What do you think about Atlanta in the past couple of years?
It's, if I'm being totally honest, I have a love-hate relationship with this city. I think part of it has to do with where I grew up, you know? I'm a kid from upstate New York, spent a lot of time in the city and in New Jersey, and so, you know, I come from a very, very different world. And then obviously moving to Denver, which is this kind of like new world ordery kind of like there is no foundation, really. It's all being created in the moment. So you go from one area that is so old school and so set in its ways. And then you go to this place that is so like progressive, forward thinking. And then you come down to the South where there's a lot of diversity, first off, but there's a lot of like, I don't want to say conflict because that's not the right word, but like there's just a lot of tension, I feel like. You know, there's so many different groups of people and they don't always mix well. And it always feels like a city that doesn't know what to do with itself, if that makes sense.
I can see what you're saying.
Yeah, and then this is an outsider's perspective. You know, I haven't, like, my roots are starting to finally be planted here because I've spent the last 2 years off the road. And so I'm finally starting to get to know the area, get to know the people better. And it's getting better, but I can tell you for certain, the first 2 years were most certainly a culture shock for me.
Oh, I bet. Coming from Denver, right?
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we share a lot of the same friends and like, you know, one of my best friends is Whit Hawkins, who's your manager. And he was like,
shout out to Whit.
You're gonna love Atlanta, but actually you're gonna hate Atlanta. And it's like, yeah, exactly. He's like, that's my city, dog, but you probably don't belong there. And it's like, yeah, you're probably right. And you know, it's, I think with any place, any new place that you go to, there's going to be that process of like figuring it out. It's easier in some places than in others. I think Denver was just, I got lucky in Denver because I came in there already knowing like a really amazing group of people. And like I said, they're building there at that time. You know, this is like in 2008, 2009, they were building their community, you know? So to just kind of slide on in and help be a part of that, was an easy thing.
Yeah.
Here it's like you are joining a community, not building a community.
Yeah, you know, I see what you're saying there. Yeah, there's a lot of promoters, a lot of, you know, the Atlanta scene has definitely been established, you know, for a while.
And it, you know, well, and I look at it this way too, where if we stick almost like strictly within like the music bubble, you know, when you have so much strength in hip hop, And really even more broadly speaking in like black cultural music, there isn't a lot to offer a goofy white kid who listens to rock and roll. not the rock and roll that I grew up on anyway, because that's the other facet is like Southern rock was never in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And so when you look at like, I mean, the only band that I can name that I truly enjoy that came from Georgia is probably REM.
Oh yeah. You know, that's funny you say that.
But
yeah.
You know, they're by no, you would never know that they were from Georgia unless you actually did your research.
Never. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, it's like STS-9.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, that's true. I guess they are technically from Georgia. I never think of them as being from Georgia, but they certainly are.
Yeah. Actually, wait, I'm from the same hometown that there's a couple of, I think, really? Maybe Murph and somebody. I think Murph went to like Shiloh High School. Or something,
oh, okay.
I heard. Yeah.
Big little sidebar real quick since those guys came up. I'm sure most of you are aware that those guys now live in the Santa Cruz area out in California, and they have been heavily, heavily affected by the wildfires out there. So send those guys your love. I believe that there might be a GoFundMe or something along those lines for Alana. I don't know all the details, but I do know that some of her property has been lost. And those guys could use your love and support. So be well out there, guys. Hope you're doing okay. But yeah, it's, you know, Atlanta's a curious place to me. It still is, you know,
an enigma.
It certainly is. And it's an evolving enigma, which is even more interesting.
It's been like that. Yeah.
Cause you think about like New Orleans, for example. New Orleans hasn't changed ever. New Orleans is New Orleans, and it probably will be for until it's underwater, and I hope they are doing okay too. But it's, you know, they're so deeply rooted in their cultural foundation that I don't know how many people could move there to ever disrupt that. Like,
yeah. They almost moved there to be a part of that.
That's the thing. Yeah, you move there to become a part of that. I think there's a lot of interesting ways that you can look at into, you know, the city that you live in or in the culture that you live in. And it's like, do you want to be a part of something special? Do you want to create something special? Do you want to get away from it all? Like, you know, and so, you know, you grew up or you live in Stone Mountain, which is pretty, I mean, I technically it's out there, right?
Yeah, yeah. So like, yeah, I live like right on the county line of Gwinnett and DeKalb, sort of between Stone Mountain and Lithonia area. Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of, you know, somebody who lives in like, you know, zone 6 or 4th ward definitely is out there. They're not going to come out there. But realistically, no. It doesn't, you know, if I'm going to come into the city for a show, that distance isn't going to necessarily prevent me or hold me back. And it's nice to kind of get out of the hustle bustle when I need. So it's almost like a best of both worlds situation. But yeah, when it comes to being influenced by that region, it was interesting because that is the area where I was sort of growing up. But I grew up in a time and I was learning music and getting like kind of in that sponge. Yep. I was kind of like a sponge for music in high school. And I was learning guitar. I was taking guitar lessons at the time. And, you know, I was absorbing a lot of reggae music. I was really like listening to this guitarist called Aaron Dugan, who's a part of this band, Roots Tonic, who ended up becoming Modest Yahoo's band.
Oh, okay.
And I was just a huge fan of Aaron's. Like, he's the guitar. The way he was using the double effects, it like took like, before that I just had acoustic guitar and I saw him and I was like, man, this is incredible.
All texture.
Yo, yeah, all texture. And I gotta, you know, other than that, I was like, I'm way more of a David Gilmore type of guy than I am a Eddie Van Halen type of guitarist. Yes, right.
I'm right there with you.
And so that was really cool for me because you know, that was something. I was living in Stone Mountain and went to see Roots Tonic at the Tabernacle. And that was one of the first big live experiences that I had that I was like, whoa, like I've got to be a part of this, you know, like the effect that had on me, like sitting on the balcony at Tabernacle, listening to a guitar tone fill a room like that, like an old church. I'd never heard that before. I'd never been immersed like that. And so after that, I was a senior in high school. And so after that, I went to my nearest shop. I was taking lessons. I knew guitar, but not enough to improvise and do the things. I wanted to just, okay, this song's in A minor. Let's get this idea.
See where it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, it was really interesting because it was like my distance from the city took me on this weird path. And then I came back to the city and I tried to infuse all that stuff I was learning into hip hop once I got that, sort of inspiration. And that kind of came through skateboarding.
Yep.
And it's sort of all this different things that I experienced on the outskirts of the city, like living, you know, past 285, which is, a lot of people don't know, I-285 in Atlanta is, it's almost more of a symbol than it is
either,
a highway.
You're either OTP or you're ITP.
Yeah, you're either inside or out.
And, well, so I can relate to that in a sense where we were talking earlier, we went and had lunch and we kind of discussed some things and I was explaining the college town ecosystem of the Northeast and how you know, bands and even just like people can kind of, you know, go from these little places sprinkled all around New York and Massachusetts and all that, and you can immerse yourself in a lot of the same things but also discover new things simultaneously. And I think, you know, kind of what you're describing is like when you're detached from the city just enough, you can choose your own adventure, sort of, and that's how the adventure continues, because you're leaving your bubble constantly, and every time you do, it like opens up a new door and you make all these new discoveries.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it, and that's exactly like at the time, you know, how it felt. It was such an inspirational like piece of my life, you know. I look back and like it was an incubation period. But that is essentially sort of what got me started making the music that I make now, because I was living outside the city and in high school, I was skateboarding a lot. And I ended up working at a skate shop called Ambush. It's no longer in the city, but they still do stuff online. But I was working there and just absorbing all that and getting, you know, there's this dude named JJ who ended up, what's up, JJ? He's one of my best friends. He ended up being my roommate. But he took me to Mike Club, man. He discovered that I was into music and that I liked hip hop and that I was sort of couldn't figure out what was going on, like with the production, like what is this, you know. I was like figuring out what sampling was versus these kids that were making beats on like Tritons and like why is that different, just figuring it out. But he invited me down to like Mike Club in like 09 in 2010, and I was like, I went almost every Tuesday for like 6 months, man, and just watched people freestyle battle. I saw my first like producer battle and showcase, and it's real interesting because I just got to sit back and see how everything was working, how all these different people were expressing themselves, and you know where in the city they were coming from, whether it was you know ICP, OTP, outside 285, whether it was coming from the north side, the south side. Everybody had something a little bit different to say in their own way, and it was just crazy to me because then I would go back out to, at this point I was staying like up in Marietta area, and I would go back out, you know, I would take it, I would take what I applied, you know, and just build off of it. And it was just all about the experience for me, just going down and being a part of that community in my club at the time, man. I loved it. I loved what Drez was doing. That was a thing that Drez the Beatnik, he's sort of a hip-hop purveyor in Atlanta, shouts to Drez, but that was his event, and he created something that was really cool and really welcoming for a lot of people, and it introduced a lot of people to hip-hop in a like a golden era style of hip-hop that you normally wouldn't find in Atlanta, you know. So getting a heavy dose of that in college, along with like just trying to make music in general on the guitar, sort of created this thing for me,
this the fusion.
And then and it was like it was only a matter of time so I heard what like Menner, Derek and Paul and those dudes were doing. They were like doing the same thing, but like what, like taking Solway, like you can divide that, you can add unison, you can make it sound like it's like a whole nother lane. So it was like it's kind of cool to go
See, you're the one guy that has kind of embraced the, so you know, we talked about this on the Maddie podcast about the Denver sound or the electro hip hop kind of thing or whatever, you know, however you know everyone kind of describes it, and you're kind of like the odd man out almost because you've embraced that sound and that cultural aspect, but you haven't made the dive to go the pilgrimage, so to speak, to Denver yet.
Oh yeah, to go. Yeah, I did stay out there in 2017. I ended up getting to open up. You know, I got to play Red Rocks with you guys, and I went and spent like 6 to 8 months out there.
Shit, well, you've been to Denver. No, I mean you haven't moved to Denver.
Not enough. I didn't picked up and brought the dog and
exactly, because you know, I think there's an interesting thing that happens to all of the artists that have come out of that is obviously there is this, it's like a giant garden and every flower kind of helps the other flowers grow, and obviously the fan base out there is so supportive, and it stretches further and wider than just the Colorado area, but you're doing it on your own terms, and you're staying in an environment that does seem to be very, you know, influential and very inspiring to you, and not just, you know, kind of taking the path of least resistance, I guess, and just being like, well, you know, all we share a lot of the same you know, nuances, we share a lot of the same audience, maybe I should just go join the party. Has that ever crossed your mind?
It did in the past, you know, when I felt like maybe that could provide different opportunities or something that I, you know, couldn't find out here. But to be honest with you, the main thing that motivates me to make music is sort of like translating sort of like my life and what I experience every day through it. And if I wasn't really translating my experience in Atlanta, it seemed like it wouldn't, you know,
it wouldn't
lose
be as
the
genuine.
Ethos. Yeah, because I, you know, living in Denver, I made some music out there, but I didn't really start a lot of music. I finished a lot of music out there. And, you know, I was out there for like 6 months. And like I said, 2017, I finished a record I made called On the Daily LP was actually finished when I moved to Denver. The cover art is like me selling records in the back of a Thunderbird, you know, like, and the whole metaphor there was trying to like, you know, raise money,
sure,
get out Denver, come back, kind of like just travel, you know, it's a kind of travel thing. And, you know, so I definitely am more inspired by living in Atlanta than I am in Denver, but it's more inspired by the history and the people.
Yeah.
Whereas in Denver, I get more inspired by the countryside and the mountains. It's just a different form, you know?
So do you think that you'll ever leave Atlanta, or do you think you're going to be a lifer?
Man,
I know obviously that's like such a,
it's hard.
You know,
yeah. It's hard to look that far in the future.
Nobody knows what's
going to
happen.
Yeah. You know, I could see myself moving, but at the same time, not in the foreseeable. You know what I mean? Like, Atlanta's really working right now for me. And I couldn't see myself right now. I don't think, you know, I think if I had to make the call, I'm probably going to be here for a minute, but.
That's good. I mean, you know, because it's always an interesting thing to me when you think about, you know, being an artist and how your environment influences you. And I can speak from my own personal experience where there are so many times in my life I felt like I needed a new environment to maintain a certain level of creativity, a change of environment.
Is that to maintain inspiration for the creativity, you think? Or is it to actual maintain creativity?
I don't know. That's the thing. I've just, like, for so long in my life, like, I never stayed in one place for more than like 3 or 4 years for a very long period of my life.
Do you feel stagnant after the four years because of that? Yeah. And like, I know that feeling.
Even when I was traveling, it was like when I lived in Colorado for 8 years, maybe 7, 8 years. And those last 2 years were really hard.
Yeah.
Even though I was on the road all the time.
Really?
When I came back to Denver, I was just like, I can't be here anymore. I need to go somewhere else. And like, it's a weird thing in Atlanta now because I'm getting to that kind of place, but I'm also in a very different place in my life.
Right.
Where it's like, I'm about to get married, going to start a family shortly thereafter, probably. And like, you know, the whole like sense of adventure has changed. Right. Where it's like, the location doesn't have to change, but the mindset has to change.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing. You know? Yeah, totally.
And so like, no, I'm not saying that I'm going to live in Atlanta for the rest of my life, but I'm pretty sure if my fiance had her way, we would.
Right. I'm glad to hear that.
But yeah, I don't know. It, you know, Atlanta's it's an interesting place, and it does offer a lot. It does ask a lot too.
Yo, yeah. You're up 85, man. Traffic sucks.
I mean, you know, there's a lot that goes into living down here. I'll tell you what, I cannot wait until, I don't know, this humidity should probably break in, what, another 2 or 3 weeks? And then we can start rolling gently into fall.
Yeah, if we're lucky.
Summer can fucking be over.
Sometimes, man, summer will just...
until Thanksgiving.
You'll get 100% humidity, 85-degree days all the way to November 2nd.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. All right, well, let's change gears a little bit. So you just recently dropped a new EP. Purple Clouds?
Yes, Purple Clouds EP came out on the anniversary, was 4-year anniversary of a project that I released in 2016 called Cloud Conductor.
Yeah.
And yeah, we released that last month.
And how do you feel about it?
Man, I feel pretty good about the music. That's sort of how I judge the releases when I put them out, is how I'm really feeling about the music and how it sounds to me. But when I submit a project to get, you know, mastered or send it those final, like, you know, stages, I got like a week or two really to where I don't have to make any more edits, like emergency edits, you know? And so that week I'll completely refrain from anything to do with the project and try to just distance myself as much as possible. And then I'll come back and then I'll listen to it and I'll try to listen to it as if I was a fan.
And to get that perspective. You'd never heard it before. Yeah.
Right. And when I had that experience with this last record, I was really excited because I liked how it came out and how, you know what I mean? I liked the experience of listening to from one song to four in that headspace. And I felt like I had achieved what I wanted to accomplish.
Yeah,
that's completely aside from metrics and all those different things.
Of course.
That denote success.
We don't care.
I felt
about
really
that.
Good about it. You know, I'm proud of
your
it.
Your manager probably cares about that, but we don't care about that.
Yeah. And everybody's been awesome. Like, I've gotten a lot of great support.
I mean,
I personally love
the record. I think it's got a great vibe to it. One of the things that I've taken from your music that I really, really, truly, genuinely enjoy, and as you can see around this room, is we definitely share an aesthetic of this like escapism mixed with like emotional gravity, and then obviously there are these like, you know, the sci-fi kind of nuance to it. And like, you know, for those of you listening at home, we are sitting in my new studio that is completely surrounded by obscure VHS tapes, Godzilla action figures, and a bunch of other nonsense.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. If you grew up in the 90s, this is your dream.
Yeah. But your music, like, it speaks to me in that way because I hear all of the things that I love. And it's really, it's a great thing, especially, you know, you're 10 years younger than me. But we do, you know, that, and that's kind of the beautiful thing about music is that it transcends all of those things. It's like when you find another person or another artist that just understands things the same way that you do, you can attach yourself to it that much more easily and that much more deeply. And I think you knocked it out of the park.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, I tried to take a very cinematic approach to it with the vocal samples and all the obscure, weird, movie-esque cloud samples that I tried to find. All
right, so I'm going to stop you right there. So this is, I was waiting for this, for those exact words, so I could unveil the movie of the week. So as you guys all know, I pick something crazy out of the collection that that is characteristic of the guest. And so this week's movie of the week isn't actually a movie. It is a collection of what we used to call serials, which is just an episodic TV show. Radar Men from the Moon.
Yo.
Introducing a new character, Commando Cody. So I'll just read a quick little blurb off the back of it here. Radar Men from the Moon. The Earth is rocked by a series of mysterious atomic explosions. The U.S. government enlists the help of scientist and inventor Commando Cody, who traces the origins of the explosions to a group of terrorists on the moon. Soon, Cody and his crew fly to the moon in their experimental rocket ship, where they confront Radek, the moon's evil ruler, who is bent on conquering the Earth with help of his powerful atomic weapons. In each two-fisted chapter, Commando Cody battles the moon men and their gangster allies with a combination of wits and futuristic weapons. Full of scrapes and amazing escapes, Radar Men from the moon will keep you on the edge of your seat. So, you know, you've already kind of
incredible,
you know, said it, but yeah, this is your movie of the week, bud.
Thanks, man. Thanks for tipping me off on Radar Men from the Moon. Yeah, this is incredible. I basically, you know, I spent like 6 months just digging for records that had any sort of hint of this aesthetic.
Yeah.
For a project that I put out called Navigator Standby.
Yep.
And this is incredible. You're gonna have to let me borrow this.
Yeah, of course.
I guess I got to find a VCR now. My belt rotted out of my VCR.
So I think I've given this tip a couple of times, but you can literally go to any Goodwill and find one for $5.
That's what's up.
And they almost always work. So if you can find some, get some tape cleaner and just clean it out before you use it. So that way you don't chew up the tapes.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty.
I've been to Goodwill.
Get one now before the prices start going up because the trend is rising.
Yeah. See, I've been to Goodwill a million times. The shirts for all different type of electronics, but I never thought about buying a VCR there because a lot of the older VCRs that I do find, like there's this problem with VCRs and tape, like old Walkman that I find, where everything will be working, but the rubber belt that like spun the spools, you know, will be dry rotted. And so you'll hit click play and it'll like snap. And then, you know, it's like an easy fix, but you got to get in there and it's just a weird thing. And so I never thought about that, but yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when I first started collecting and when I first started doing all the analog stuff, you know, I would just buy VCRs from Goodwill and, you know, they'd last 3 months, 6 months. You know, if you care enough about it, you can start to kind of identify certain things to be like, okay, this one's probably, you know, safe. This one isn't, so on and so forth. And then eventually, you know, just like we do in record collecting, right? Like how many of you out there who collect records started with one of those fucking Crosley record players from Urban Outfitters or wherever you get them, right? Those $50 pieces of junk. But you start there, right? And then you go and you buy the $150 record player, maybe if you're lucky. And then eventually if you care that much about it, you realize you got to go spend the money to really, you know, to get the quality that you're looking for. And so this VCR right here is actually a professional broadcast VCR. It's a super VHS player. So this is what they used to use in the 90s to film like news, like the evening news and shit. And then they'd record it to tape.
Bust it down or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like in its day, that was like a $4,000 VCR.
Yeah, like master VCR.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It's actually still worth a shit ton of money. I found one on eBay not that long ago. And it was like the asking price, I think, was like $1,500. And I think I think they'd made an offer and I think it sold for like $1,200 or $1,300.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man. I have this Tascam unit at home that's basically the same exact unit for the same exact function, like with workflow in the studio. But it's a rack mount tape player from like the late 80s. And the heads on it are incredible because at that point with like cassette tape players, like they had already, like the heads are, you know, on those players what made them that much better, like the next generation. So they'd already figured all that out. And so, yeah, this unit is like this. It's the most heavy-duty rack-mount tape player I've ever had. It has an A deck, a B deck, and it was made strictly for if someone came into a studio, you know, recorded a song, and then somebody mixed it down. Before they left, they would bust everything down into this tape player.
Yeah, and fire out a few copies or whatever. Yeah,
and it's pretty dope. Like it reads all three of the major cassettes and all the way to metal cassettes. And that metal cassettes are fun, man, because they're basically CD quality. Like you can hear the top level of hi-hats on those. And stuff.
I don't think I've ever actually seen a metal cassette before.
They say like CR2. They look the same, but it's just a little bit of a cartridge difference. That
gotcha.
Will, yeah.
So maybe I have then, and I didn't realize.
Yeah,
that.
I'm gonna bring you one.
All right. all right, but anyway, so back to the album, because I know I kind of cut you off there a little bit, but you were kind of, you know, going into, you know, what, you know, kind of brought it all together.
Right, like and we're talking about Navigator Standby in the Moon. Yeah. Yeah, so I was digging for about 6 to 8 months I would hit all the record shops in Atlanta that were along my route. Sweet Melissa Records, I would hit Book Nook. And then I would go to Wuck Street, and then I would hit whatever antique shop I could
find. What's the spot on, I forgot to talk to you about this one, actually, because this is my favorite record store in Atlanta, and I always forget that it exists, and I actually live right down the street from it now.
Okay.
And I haven't been there since I moved right down the street from it, is that spot over on, in Buckhead.
Yo, is Fantasyland?
Fantasyland, yeah.
Yeah, that spot, actually, I know, I haven't, they got a new location, I heard.
Oh, really?
Is that
they move?
I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I this would have been years ago, but I heard they moved from that one crazy Buckhead spot to somewhere close by. I gotta check that first, but I haven't been there in a minute.
Yeah,
but you went there.
I've been there. I used to go there all the time when I first moved to Atlanta.
Okay.
And I don't know, for some reason I just made friends with one of the old guys there.
Yeah.
And like they were like the friendly dudes, and they would talk you up for 30 minutes, and
They had a 45 room, I think.
Yeah,
too,
they got a 45 room. They have an amazing, amazing like jazz and classical like section of like actual good shit, not just the like the 50 cent records that you can find, you know, everywhere. Like they actually put some care into like some of the shit that they were getting.
Heavily curated.
Yeah, and it's so funny because we were talking about record stores earlier, and I just went to Wuck Street for the first time like 2 weeks ago. And I completely forgot that Fantasyland even existed, and I literally live 3/4 of a mile away from it. maybe it's a little bit more than that, but like
time to pay him a visit, man. Grab a t-shirt.
I'm gonna have to go say hi now that things are, I don't know, kind of happening again.
Yeah. So yeah, I was digging out, you know, this aesthetic, and I would find whatever I could with this, you know, with that mid-century space exploration font or that art, and I would just scour. And
it's a vibe.
Yeah,
it's 100%
a
vibe.
It's a feel. Yeah, yeah. It's something that transcends just
you know, and like the
audio and the music.
One of the things that I think is like, it's so lost in a lot of like entertainment today, is the a sense of humor in the sense of like it's okay to like laugh at yourself, you know, the like self-deprecation or the like just like the camp value, like campiness, you know, like so many like movies from the 80s, you know, are like just full of it. And really that all started in the 50s, the 50s and then into the 60s. Was just like, you think of like the original Batman TV show, right?
Yeah.
The campiest fucking thing on the planet. Like, we're supposed to be taking the Dark Knight and fighting all of these supervillains, and it's just slapstick nonsense for 25 minutes straight. And it's amazing because they were so self-aware that it's like, it's okay. We can have fun with this.
Yeah, it was like a live comic book at that
point. Yeah. And I think a lot of people are scared to do that now. And like, it's okay to have a sense of humor, and it's okay to like pull from these things that aren't necessarily cool, you know, to like the mainstream or whatever. But yeah, I think it's great that you've discovered all of these things, because
appreciate it, man. It's fun. I love bringing that to the music, you know. I love trying to bring that visual
feel aspect to the music. Like, that's something I do enjoy. So I will say in the future, when it comes to the music I do put out, it will probably be inspired by something similar, you know what I mean? Yeah. There'll be always a feel or always some sort of visual aesthetic vibe that will be coming through the music in a non-visual way,
you know. I think all of the best artists, right, there if there's one similarity, and this transcends genre or this transcends any of those things, is an understanding how to thread your past into the new things that you bring to the table, and not, you know, not being afraid to try something different. But, you know, inherently, if you're true to yourself, there will always be ties to the things that you have done, but it's okay to do them differently as you progress. And I think, you know, you look at bands like Radiohead or Phish or who's like Muse is a good example, right? Where it's like the last album that they put out is so unholy different from the album that they put out 10 years ago. But at the end of the day, you know exactly who it is.
Yeah, the common denominator they did deliver is still there, although they've had, you know, changed and progressed the sound. Yeah, it's interesting. It's hard to put into words that effect, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
you're right. Like, Radiohead's a good example. You know, Pink Floyd's a good example. They have, you have like four different eras of their music.
Well, the thing with Pink Floyd that's interesting, and I could do an entire episode on Pink Floyd.
Oh, I know you could. That's why I brought it up.
You know, the tricky part with Pink Floyd is obviously the cast changes. So inherently the music changes, right? So those are kind of forced circumstances. When you kind of look at now from it would be Obscured by Clouds would technically be the first Gilmore album.
Right, which is almost, as, you know, just a precursor to Dark Side. Like, that's what it sounds like.
And, well, it's also a soundtrack, which people don't actually know.
No, they don't know. And if you go to Italy, they put out, like, two companion, like, 45s.
More.
Yeah, four to promote the movie. Yeah. And a lot of people, so there's a, that companion release strategy is
so I love that. That love album, first off, I'm going to say this right now. For everybody who gushes over Dark Side of the Moon, Wish You Were Here, like, don't get me wrong. Timeless albums, amazing albums. I love every single piece of music that Pink Floyd has ever put out there. I am so in the wrestling business, there is a term for somebody like this. They're called a mark. All right. It's somebody who's just like, they've bought in 100%. Right. So I'm a mark for Pink Floyd. Okay. And it breaks my heart that Obscured by Clouds is so underappreciated, because people don't realize that it's a collection of music. It's not an album per se, right? It's a soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So it's a collection of music. So it doesn't have that, like,
and it's a soundtrack to a movie in the 70s. You know what I mean? So it's different from what you would expect, even in that sense.
And so you have to, understand what it is supposed to be, to understand what it is and why it is as good as it is. Because if you heard any of those songs backing a movie, you'd be like, this is the best fucking movie ever. Listen to how sick this shit is. You know, and like,
especially in that era when it was done before. Like,
if you can put yourself in that place and set aside those preconceived notions of like, okay, these guys create these thematic albums and they're, you know, these rock operas and all that kind of stuff, and just sit there and just take it in. It's ironic because that album is perfect for the streaming era, because you could just play one or two of those songs and they stand on their own, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to listen to the entire album from front to back. So go listen to Obscured by Clouds. But anyway, when you move into the post Roger Waters era, it's obviously that's David Gilmour's time to really, you know, bring his style to the table. So you strip away all the bravado and you strip away all the Broadway kind of pomp and circumstance that Roger really, you know, started to, you know.
Are you the Division Bell fan?
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's one of my mother's favorite.
Yeah,
Pink Floyd records.
I have a very deep connection to that album because my parents actually got divorced 6 months before it came out, and so you know, obviously the title says it all.
My parents got divorced right before that Cher song came out. Do you believe in life after love?
Oh really,
bro? Yeah. Couldn't get away
so,
from it.
Yeah,
I
mean,
you.
So there are things like that too, where it's like those personal connections that, you know, you take those with you for the rest of your life. But yeah, Pink Floyd to me, and I've said this before, I got to see David Gilmour on his last tour for the Rattle That Lock tour at the United Center in Chicago. And I've probably been to, either working or as a fan, I've probably been to well over 1,000 concerts in my life. I mean, probably way, way, way bigger number than even that. I don't know. I mean, almost 20 years of touring.
Yeah, probably bigger than that.
Yeah, it's probably a lot bigger than that, actually. Either way, David Gilmour put on the single greatest concert I have ever witnessed in my life.
And that's because you're a Pink Floyd fan, or because it was just...
It was that good. But obviously, here's the deal. You're never going to enjoy a concert at that level unless you have a connection to that music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I'm not the guy that tells somebody to go see Fish, right? I'm not the guy to tell somebody to go see Radiohead. You have to love the music to enjoy. Like, you will be surprised. You will find new music, but you have to do it on your terms, I feel like. And so I've never taken that approach of like, you need to go do this. Like, no, you find your way there. If you find your way there, I'll help you along the way. But I don't think forcing music upon people is ever very successful.
Yeah, no, music's too personal in a lot of ways, you know.
But speaking of that, I guess we can kind of start to wrap this up, but I do want to kind of explore, I got some insider information on your deep love and affection for how you work with your audience, especially from like a merchandising standpoint, and the amount of care that you put into it. And so, like, you know, you told me earlier about how much the community means to you, and obviously, you know, the way that you approach, you know, your merchandising and how you handle your merchandising is definitely very reflective of that care of your audience.
Well, yeah, I just to insinuate that, I appreciate that, because I do at least try to put a lot of care and intent into the things I design that end up, you know, stimulating into the fans and the community. And I guess I just feel really like the stuff that I put out, whether it be clothes or music or anything visual or a video edit or whatever, it has to have meaning and be intent and have a timeless aspect to it. That's what I really shoot for, is like the timelessness of it. So like, if I put out a piece of merch or a record, in 20 years, if someone finds that shirt or that record in a store, I don't want them to be able to look at it and be like, man, this definitely probably came out in 2015 or 16 in that electro era. Like, you can tell just by looking at it. Like, I want it to be timeless. Like, I want it to have everything that we have right now as far as the impact and all that, but I don't want it to be a like fad. You know what I mean? I want it to transcend it to that.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So when it comes to like the merchandising and the clothes, I look at it the same way. Like I want people to want to wear that stuff that don't even know what Daily Bread Music is, sure. because the texture matches the aesthetic of the typography, and it just makes them feel good. It's just balanced out. The colors are nice, you know, like it's just the timelessness of the design. And really, and the idea is, but you know, it really comes down to like the really cool community that this sort of little lane of our industry keeps in, you know, they're supportive in a way that I feel like I have a bunch of friends and not just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're not just completely different from
they're
not just like, you know, a ticket sale, or they're not just whatever.
And
like,
so with my career, I kind of got into this a little bit later than a lot of kids do now. Like I kind of started putting music to the forefront and really promoting it when I was like 26 or 27. So I never really, you know, I had always in my earlier 20s and stuff always was making beats and just dreamt of, just fantasized about being able to do that all the time, not knowing it'd ever be a reality. And so when that I had a chance to make it that, I just had a profound appreciation. I knew that my effort just, it wasn't cheap to me. I needed to make it. Nope. I wanted to make it saturated in meaning and really wanted to stimulate everybody.
And I love that. I mean, that's, you know, it's always nice to, you know, it's always nice to have artists that care about their art, about their fan base. You're not just in it for the money, or you're not just in it to, you know.
Well, thanks, man. It's
party
an, it's,
or whatever.
It's like we talked about earlier. Yeah. It's like an existential thing, you know. It's a gift to be able to do this, and I think you have to look at it like that, and you have to be thankful for that, you know, or else like where's your head gonna go? Yep. You know,
you're gonna turn into Justin Bieber or something.
Yeah. So if you're putting out and if you're putting out a
he
shirt,
he kind of cares, I think. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. You never know what the hell's going on in his head.
But I just feel like if I put out into something and it's not saturated in meaning, I put it out like it's my last thing I'm ever going to put out, because I don't know, man. Like, you know, like I ain't shit. Like, you that's know what
I
mean? Like,
I mean, nothing's for certain. We all know that we're all experiencing that right now.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, and I think, you know, we were kind of talking about the, you know, how the circumstances of the times has affected people in different ways. And, you know, you can choose to look at the negative aspects of it, which there are many. We could go on for days, you know, but there are positive aspects to this too. If you can, you know, consider yourself, I guess, lucky enough to find them, you know, whether it's the gift of time or the gift of like insight into yourself, into how, you know, how you can move your art forms forward. Because a lot of times when you get stuck in the hamster wheel, everything becomes repetitious, and it's and it can be hard to break out of that sometimes. And so and then that's when, you know, things become stale, or that's when like the fad kind of dies. Because, you know, unless you do have that, like that gravity, people will catch on soon enough that it's not all that it's cracked up to be. And so we're in a circumstance now where it's like, okay, you can't go play shows, you can't make money, you can't do that, you can't interact with your audience the way that you're accustomed to. Get creative, look inside yourself, you know, find new ways to foster all of the things that actually matter. I know, like, you know, you and I have worked together a couple of times over the last few months, and it's been some of the most fun I've had in a long time, you know.
Yeah,
and
same. I couldn't say that would happen without COVID.
Exactly. And so, you know, and I look forward to doing it more and in front of people eventually.
yeah, I appreciate your optimism, man, because I try to carry that same mindset into this year, you know. Once everything started popping, I just keep the same mindset, and I just did the best. I just tried to adapt. I tried to, you know, do the best I could to spend the time I'd normally spend on the road designing cooler merch, or you know, trying to figure out how to animate two frames of a Photoshop.
I know,
file.
Your little video thing that you did was actually really clever and really cool.
Yo,
and I was like,
thanks, man.
I was like, fuck this guy, because like I'll sit here and torture myself for hours on end doing the most complicated dumb shit, and you just took two cool pictures and like superimposed them on top of each other, and I was like, fuck
you. Yeah, no, you know what's crazy though? I still sat there for about 8 hours.
I know it's time consuming, but then, don't get me wrong.
But you know what's crazy? Like, it'll click and be like, man, this could be cool, and it's crazy. Sometimes you will sit there for 9 hours and then just to figure out what's cool, and then you execute in 30 minutes. It's weird how that works.
No, for sure. But like, it's like, but the concept, right?
The
concept of it is actually,
it was more simple than it looks.
It's so simple. And I was like, damn it. All right. You got appreciate something
that.
Here. Yeah.
Hey, I take that as a massive compliment from you, Greg. Thank you, buddy.
Sick. All right, man. Well, Rhett, thank you so much for sitting down with me. It's been a pleasure. I wish you well as we move forward in all of this craziness.
Thanks, man.
And I'm going to come to the lake soon.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
come over. Come over. Bring Radar Moon from the men.
From the moon. All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, shouts out to Breadheads.
And stay tuned for another episode coming soon.